Welcome back, everyone, to Business Aspirin. I'm your host, Clint Janelle. Today, I have with me Michael Tooley. And Michael is with Jim Ultrasonic, and he is a specialty restoration kind of guy. We're super happy to have Michael on today and chat with us a little bit about business growth and pain points and all the things that we try to navigate on Business Aspirin. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, no worries. Thank you.
So let's talk about Michael. Where in the world are you right now, Michael?
I'm in Westchester, Pennsylvania, about 40 minutes outside of Philadelphia, southwest of Philadelphia.
Okay. So still part of the metro Philly area or?
Yeah.
It's completely separate that way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, like part of, Delaware, Jersey. Yeah,
sure. Perfect. Well, let's talk a little bit about Michael. Who is Michael? How did you get into the restoration space? Where did you start off? What's the story of what made Michael who Michael is?
Completely by accident, to be honest with you. I fell into this, not knowing that I was doing this for a living. I went to school for sports management. I had seen the movie Jerry Maguire, and I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to be a sports agent or work in the industry. So I had gone to Temple University, took sports management. I worked for the Philadelphia Flyers. I did every type of internship you can imagine to get into the industry. And luckily I did. I was able to work in the minor league system of the Kansas City Royals. That was my first full-time job outside of out of college. And working in minor league baseball doesn't pay much, but you're 22, 23 years old. You're just like, I'm just happy for the opportunity. And as I got into it, I realized, being in the sports industry or those type of industries, you're a dime a dozen. They're not going to pay you much, and you're going to work 90 to 100 hours a week, especially during the baseball season. I couldn't take vacation. I lived at the stadium. And so my father, who owned his own business as well, he owned a hair salon. He was cutting my hair one day, and he's like, well, how's work going? And I was like, I just live there. I'm always there. And he goes, well, I know this guy in Philly, in the northeast part of Philadelphia, that has these ultrasonic cleaning machines. You can clean blinds with them. You can do all kinds of stuff with them. And as the 23, 24-year-old punk guy was, I was like, I'm not doing that. I work in the sports industry. I'm too cool for that. So at the end of the season, I go to my dad and I said, what's that guy's number again? Because it was just like, all right, I had enough of this. So I looked into getting the ultrasonic machines. I got one that strictly does, it's about 6 feet wide. It does blinds and you can do other things with it. And then I got one that's kind of like looks like a whirlpool where you can, do engine parts, you can do fuel filters, all kinds of stuff. So, I went out on my own, just started knocking on doors, just started selling it, had no idea what I was doing, kind of learned as I was going. And 22 years later, here I am.
And here you are.
Yeah.
Specializing in specialty restoration of all kinds of different things.
Yeah. Content cleaning. We also do carpet cleaning, and we also do a lot of blinds and drapery cleanings because I do have the ultrasonics for that. And, we do the regular type of either encapsulation method or hot water extraction for carpets. So we diversified, throughout the years, but still the main thing we do is the ultrasonics.
Sure. Okay. So then, in your case, I would anticipate a lot of it is working for other restoration companies in some capacity too. Would that be accurate?
Yes and no. Some of them do have their own ultrasonic cleaning machines. Some of them don't. It's working with property managers a lot. I work with a lot of real estate agents, insurance companies, of course. And then on that flip side, I work with car dealerships for parts, auto parts. Believe me, the kind of auto parts that they send us to dip into these machines. So it's very, very diversified in, who I work with and what I do, because there's so much different avenues you can go with. It's just, you know, soot and smoke damage content items and stuff like that. So it took a while. I mean, when I first got started, you know, ultrasonics, it wasn't really a popular thing, especially to the general public when, you know, when I was doing the B2C sales, you know, people are like, well, what's ultrasonics? I don't know. But now, you know, you have ultrasonic, you have sonic toothbrushes, you have, I've seen sonic vacuum cleaners. So it's more well known and people, you know, understand the process of what it does now as compared to when I first started.
Sure. So when did you start? Like, when did you start this business?
2003.
So you've been out a long time.
Yeah. 22 years.
Yeah. So in that, like, how big's your team now? How many people you run doing this?
What's some... You guys, I've learned over the years that the hardest part, but I sub out stuff too. I work with, you know, I have installers and stuff like that on the blind and drapery end. I have, you know, for rugs, I have a guy that does what we call installs for rugs and stuff like that as well. What I found is, being a business owner, that employees are the hardest thing in business to keep them. Sure. I have a guy that's been with me for about 5 years. The rest, it's kind of almost like a revolving door. So that does get frustrating. So I've learned to pivot and, you know, see what I can do. I'm not a huge restoration company. I'm not a 24-hour, you know, like a Belfour or Serpro, anything like that. I'm, you know, more specialized, smaller, and I like it that way. I don't want the headaches of all that kind of nonsense. But yeah, that if I had to, you know, pick a specific challenge, especially I guess with any business, is, you know, finding the right people to work for you and, you know, having them stay on top of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Getting them there, getting them trained, and then keeping them around, because you do all those parts and then people want to leave and think they're going to go do what you do. They get stuck, right?
Yeah, it's like a hamster on the wheel sometimes. You know, you train them, you get them going, and then next thing you know, they left, and then you just got to do the whole process over again. So yeah, if I have to say anything, you know, especially people that are looking to be entrepreneurs or anything, business owners, solopreneurs, you know, that's something you're going to have to deal with if you decide to go that route and get employees.
Yeah, sure. So you're still pretty hands-on then on the day-to-day of...
Yeah, I am, because I'm kind of a perfectionist that way. Like I've learned to kind of set back a little bit. But, you know, when you start something, you know, it's my responsibility. I'm not a micromanager, but I always want to make sure it's done right. And I think teaching your employees is also a big thing. You know, education is huge, especially in this industry, the restoration industry, especially with your certifications and stuff like that. You know, I don't want, you know, because the people that work for me going into other people's houses, that's a representation of me and my company. So, you know, I make sure that, you know, they're just as good as if I was going in there myself. And if there isn't any problems, you know, there's a difference between being a boss and a leader. You know, a boss will tell you what to do and then it reprimands you, he can embarrass you. He's not a leader. I believe there's two different things into that. Whereas a leader, you know, teaches, educates. Yes, if you do make a mistake, you inform them of what the mistake was about. And hopefully they learn from that mistake and that they get better with, you know, whatever duties they are doing. So that's another thing I found out, especially working with other companies. You know, you have bosses and then you have leaders. And I've met my fair share of bosses.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is tough, man. It's tough to navigate. So you said education is important, but you jumped into something and just started, right? So one, how did you learn on the ultrasonic side? I guess your dad knew somebody that had them. Did you learn from them? How did you learn? And then how are you teaching your staff how to do what you guys do?
I learned, well, the people that I bought the machines from, they're Marantz Ultrasonics. They're out of Northeast Philadelphia. They're still in business. They've been in business. They started out, I believe, as a drapery company, and they started manufacturing the ultrasonic machines. I'm sure people that are listening to your podcast that have ultrasonic machines probably have heard of Marantz. And they offered free training when you bought the machines. So that's how I learned. And for the, first couple years, we used to do, I was able to do electronics and stuff like that, but things are such throwaway things now. They, especially with insurance companies, they just get rid of them unless it's something huge. But, I was always going up there because they were only about maybe 45, 50 minutes from me. If I didn't, I wasn't sure of something, they were right there. I could take it to them, they could show me. So they were a really big help in educating me on the do's and don'ts of using ultrasonics, and then, and there's times where I'll still call them up. Hey, what about this? What about that? And I know there's a guy I talked to as far as the blinds and stuff, cleaning those, or he's in Chicago, in the Chicago suburbs. I'll email him. Hey man, what, how do you do this? What's your method of cleaning these draperies? Because some of these draperies are very high end. They're thousands upon thousands of dollars, and you don't want to ruin them,
Sure.
and that's out of your pocket. You don't want to do an insurance claim. So, it's networking, it's education, and then taking that information and then teaching the people that you're that work for you. So, taking it step by step slowly, you're not just going to take one of my new guys and say, okay, man, have at it. Good luck. See ya. I'm going to be on the golf course. It's, you might have to baby them for a little bit. Everybody learns differently. Some guys will get it right away. Some people takes a little bit of time, but then you generally know, especially with employees, who can do what, who can you trust more in certain situations than others. But I believe that everybody has an important part on your team, especially when you're a business owner. Everybody's good at something. They might not be good at everything, but there's some kind of, just like any type of sports team or something. Because I relate a lot of my teaching to team building with my guys as the same as a sports team, because it's kind of the same. You're just
Sure.
cleaning instead of playing football or baseball or something like that.
Sure. So this is kind of a unique conversation because most of the people we have on, like they're an HVAC contractor or they're a water, fire, smoke restoration contractor. But you somehow found a specialty, and you jumped in this niche specifically for the ultrasonic. How did you go about determining what you were going to be working on, what your niche was going to be in the space?
Well, with the training, they did tell you what you could go after as far as, working with other restoration companies that didn't have the ultrasonic machines. I primarily, when I first got started doing a lot of blinds and shades, because I have that type of machine for it. And to this day, I still do a ton of blinds and shades to clean because, and I'm not talking, the vinyl mini blinds or the metal mini blinds. Yeah, we do those for apartment complexes that we work for. I'm talking more of the higher end Hunter Douglas silhouettes, luminettes, room shades and stuff that people don't want to replace, but opting to get it cleaned, the ultrasonics does a beautiful job with it. So, it's just going through steps of when I got trained by Marantz telling me, when they train you, they tell you exactly, hey, you need to hit these type of people, you need to go to these type of events. You can start out, if you want to just get your feet wet with the customer base, do blinds and shades. And I'm the only one in my area that does it. So I have the niche, not only for the ultrasonics, but the clean blinds and shades. I have the niche here because I'm the only one that does it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you mentioned earlier that employees going out, people going out represent you, and you're concerned about making sure that the quality is right. Right. You want that representation to be good. So how do you ensure the same quality and consistency from the representation on site to the actual cleaning and the ultrasonic? How do you ensure, what processes do you have in place to make sure you have some consistency across the board?
Well, I think it's the training. It's almost like a checklist that you go through. When you go into the house, you do this, you do that, and I kind of, instill that into my guys. This is what you should do. This is how you do it. And literally, there's a checklist. Don't put ladders on people's walls. I've seen that a million times, and that gets under my skin. Ladder will stand up on itself. You don't need to put it up against the wall. I don't need to go paint a wall for something you scratched. Loading the trucks, you know, here's the checklist. For this job, you need to make sure these are in the truck. Make sure, you know, you have these tools. So it's procedures that we, you know, the procedures that we do through, it's almost like a checklist, like a pilot, you know, taking a you know, flying a plane, you know, and it's, you know, sometimes they forget.
Sure, absolutely.
So, you know, you get the list and you'll find it.
The reality, one of the things I see all the time to our team is we work in an industry where if everything always went exactly the way it was supposed to, there would be no industry.
Sure.
Like the industry exists because things don't go like they were supposed to. So sometimes I look at that and go, okay, we can navigate this as long as you're not making it so problematic that we can't resolve it. Then that's not a terrible scenario. The ultrasonic is interesting because it's like, it's a unique technology in the restoration space. And I would anticipate probably less than 20% of the restoration contractors have ultrasonics themselves. Is it less than that? Or what would be your take on all of that?
In my area, it seems like they have some type of form of it. I used to work with a restoration guy that didn't have it, and then he went out and got it. But the bigger ones seem to have it. The smaller guys, no. But like the big
players do, for sure.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But they have Belfour. You know, Belfour is a huge company here. And I'm sure nationwide, they're right down the street. ServPro, of course. So yeah, the smaller players, yeah, you can work with. But the bigger guys, they definitely have it. I don't even try to sell to them.
So where do you think, I mean, because you're in a technology space with what you do, although it's old technology, it still was cutting edge at the time and still not the predominant method of people cleaning contents in the space, right? Mm-hmm. I think still a lot of people hand wipe contents and things of that nature. So where do you see technology going in your particular space or in the restoration industry as a whole? Any thoughts on any of that? Or what are you watching? What are you paying attention to right now?
I think with AI, especially as far as, well, the ultrasonics, I think it's just going to get bigger. I mean, there's a guy in Delaware I know, they have these massive ultrasonic machines that are, you know, 10 times the size of mine. I think it would be more popular as it goes along. And then with AI and all that kind of stuff, who knows if robots will come in and they'll, you know, I think UV light is now used too and stuff like that to clean. So I think it'll be less labor intensive, you know, on all sides, especially with technology. So who knows? Who knows the way it's going to work out?
Sure.
But I think it's for the better. But, you know, whatever. But in the same time, it's if you're a business owner, yes, you can cut profits. You don't need to use, you know, laborers, and you can use the technology just like in any business. You can save some money there. But sometimes, you know, people, I don't care what you do. I don't care how much technology you use. You're going to need people. You're going to need somebody hands-on.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like there's some opportunities there in that space specifically. You know, whether it's robotic assembly lines to move contents through, depending on what it is. But yeah, I just wondered if you had any thoughts about, you know, what happened there and how it was going, and if your ultrasonic manufacturer was talking about new things they were trying to do.
Nothing really like to the extent of that, although it would make sense. But then cost comes into effect with that, you know, with robotic assembly lines to,
sure,
you know, so.
Sure.
But who knows what will happen in the next 10 years.
So you said you didn't want an actual restoration company because of the headaches associated with that. So how's the work-life balance in your world and in the ultrasonic world?
I think you can have, it all depends on what you want, especially as a business owner. If you want to be the top guy out there and you want to run like a national company, go for it. You know, if that's what you want, go for it. But, you know, there's a give and take to everything. You know, if you're going to do that, you're not going to have a life. You know, sure. If you're married, good luck. You know, you're never going to see your kids. You're never going to see your wife. You may be divorced. I've talked to several restoration guys, especially the guys that do 24 hours. They're always away. I think if you can make a really good profit, have, you know, 3-4 trucks and be satisfied with that. You got the work coming in. You still have the work-life balance. And I think it's important, especially for your sanity. You know, I think it's, you need some type of break. You can't, I mean, unless, I mean, I've seen guys that are just all in and, you know, that's all they want to do. That's, but in every industry, there's somebody like that. Sure. But I think you can find yourself a happy medium of where you want to be, where you want to take it. It's all mindset, really. It's how far you want to take it with anything.
Yeah. Well, it's also being willing to be resilient, right? And mm-hmm. navigating that as it goes. So let's talk about then about some challenges. What are some challenges that you face, Michael, in starting GEM Ultrasonic? And what are some things that you wish you had known prior to starting?
Probably the biggest thing was I didn't know what I was doing in the beginning. So I had to learn as I went. I think if I started it now, it'd be a different story. What was ultrasonics? People thought it was a gimmick. People thought it was like, you know, is this a scam? Like, does this really work? And I'm like, yeah, give me a piece, you know, give me something to clean, or give me a blind to clean and I'll clean it and I'll bring it back. Oh, okay. Well, it does a really good job. So it was that. It's, you know, obviously employees is another thing, working with other people, you know, subbing things out is another one. You have to make sure you have good people working that you're working with too. So I would definitely probably have educated myself more in the beginning, like prior to doing the ultrasonics, you know. But again, it was really not many people knew much about it then. So I was kind of like, but if I was going in it today, obviously educate yourself as much as possible.
Sure.
And make go to step four. You know, as far as that cost, your finances, you know, if you're going out on your own, you know, have enough money to survive for 6 months, you know, just like any business, you're going to have to struggle for a little bit, unless you, you know, just come up with this brilliant idea, you know, and make money right out of the gate. But usually that's that way.
It's a pretty common theme is managing cash flow with the entrepreneurs that we talk with, at least to start with.
Yeah.
I don't know that we've had anyone on that was just, you know, wealthy and decided they wanted to do some kind of service industry related thing and just did it because it sounded fun to them. All of them had a need, recognized an opportunity, and took a chance. And for the most part, you know, you have to be smart about what you're doing in that, you know, interim phase, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've had guys on that talk about, you know, they went and did this project and they got started early and got a project very quickly, and they made a lot of money initially on one project and thought that was going to be the way the world went the whole time, and went out and bought a new truck because they had made so much money. And, you know, next thing you know, they're in a bind and they've strapped, you know, struggling and scrapping and trying to make things work a different way. And the world always has a way of pivoting on us in terms of what we think is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And best laid plans, right? So it's an interesting way to do that. I appreciate your comment about, you know, watching cash flow and all that stuff, because I think it's vital that as an entrepreneur, you pay attention to it.
There were times I had to pivot a few times in business because, you know, something you get comfortable. I mean, I'm not going to lie. There have been times that I've gotten comfortable and then it's bit me in the ass and you're like, oh, okay, well now I got to do this or I got to do that. So, you know, and then you see your checking account dwindle and you're like, okay, well, you know, get back on the horse. But, I think a lot of companies, like you said, you see business is great. You start buying a new truck and then, you know, the economy, COVID, you know, whatever, even though COVID was great for us. But some industries, I had friends in the restaurant industry. I had friends that were barbers. You know, it was tough for them. You know, not every industry flourished through COVID. But, you know, my father always said, make sure you save money for a rainy day because you don't know how long it's going to rain for, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's definitely important. You know, you don't make smart decisions. Don't make, you know, irrational decisions, you know, make educated risks. You know, I mean, some guys will just, it's like gambling to them. They'll just throw it in and see what happens. Throw a Hail Mary in there. And sometimes they win big and sometimes they lose big, but you're going to have to cover your losses if you lose, and some guys can't, and they'll just throw them right out of business.
Yeah. And we've seen plenty of that too, unfortunately, right? Like it's not what we hope for in the space, but there's some of that that exists. You know, the restoration space at some level is shielded from what the economy is doing, but that doesn't mean there's not remodelers that decide to jump in the restoration space because they see the opportunity. It doesn't mean that, you know, when things pivot, change, that people are capable and able to release. In our case, insurance deductibles have gone through the roof. You know, you go from a $2,000 deductible now to a 2% deductible, then that's a very different scenario. And people are having to try to navigate that, and restorers are having to navigate that. Are there any economic challenges that you guys are facing right now in your markets in regard to, is it as busy as always? Is it slower than usual? Is there things you're having to pivot on right now? Where are we seeing?
I would say with the doing the B2C, I mean, they're obviously busier times than others. You know, right now, spring is usually is busy. Summer slows down a little bit, and then it'll pick back up in the fall for that kind of stuff. Then the winters, you know, January is usually a decent month. February is probably the worst month of the year. So, right. But you prepare for them. You prepare for, you know, the winters, as I like to call it. You know when you're going to make your money, and then you know when you're not going to make your money. And sometimes it doesn't always work like that. Something will throw you for a loop. Something will happen. But always be prepared for it, because you don't know what's going to, you know, you may not know what's going to happen. You can forecast it and be like, okay, but life happens, man. And you got to know how to prepare for it. You got to make sure you got some money in the bank. Otherwise you're going to be in trouble.
Sure.
Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice you've received in business?
That's a good question.
You know, any of those things that you're just like, man, I'm so glad that they did that and I took that advice or whatever.
I think personally is building relationships with people. I think that's the best thing. Networking. And I learned that in college. Networking, networking, networking. Because the more people you know, the more things will happen for you. You know? Sure. I mean, they can teach you how to make sales and make all this money. But, you know, it comes down to relationships with your employees, with the people you work for, you know, meeting you, you know. Somebody can always help you out. And I think, you know, I go to networking events all the time because I just like to meet people. I enjoy it. I like meeting people. I like learning from people. And, you know, you might meet somebody that's better, you know, you might be good at the, you know, cleaning aspect of the business, but as far as handling the books, that might not be your bag. Well, you meet somebody that knows how to do that. Well, then you hire them, or you find somebody from another company that might work for your team. You know, I would say networking is the best advice, business advice.
As many people as you can.
Yes.
Sure. Well, and to that vein too, if you were thinking about pain points you've experienced and you were talking to, you know, an 18-year-old version of yourself that was going to jump into business, what would you start? What are the things you would share with that person right now?
Probably the same thing I just said. Be educated in what you want to do in any business. Educate yourself on, you know, if you want to be, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the restoration business, but say you wanted to build a software company or something like that, with the computers and all that. Be educated. Educate yourself as much as you possibly can in the industry that you want to pursue. Secondly, get to know as many people in that industry as you possibly can and ask questions. What were their mistakes? What did they do wrong? What would they do differently? And go from there. And then, you know, then you just make sure you have, how much is this going to cost you, you know, to do? Are you going to be able to handle the pressure? Some people are not bosses. You know, it's just like in baseball. You know, I learned, you know, some people make great managers and some people are just players. You know, some people, they like the idea of running a business, but then they can't handle the pressures of losing employees or, you know, work it slow and then they panic. You know, you have to kind of keep an even keel, ride the waves, but I would say those three things, as far as educating yourself, networking, and make sure your finances are in order, that you know, you have enough to do it, you know, if you have enough to save for, you know, all that kind of stuff. And be as much, especially in the restoration company the restoration industry, be as detailed oriented as possible. You know, if you're not detail oriented, then you might be a little bit in trouble because you have to. But you can apply that to any business.
Sure.
It's just going to help you in the long run.
Sure. You got to be able to do your job well. You got to be able to document that you did your job well.
Yes.
In order to get paid for what you're trying to do. Absolutely. I don't disagree with that one bit. You know, it's interesting that, you know, there are a lot of people that, like what you're saying, try to just jump into that space and they're not prepared for it. Mm-hmm. And they panic. Like regularly we have conversations on Business Aspirin about people saying, you know, if I had an easy opportunity to just quit and go do a regular job again, it's easy to, when that pressure gets hard and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, how am I going to, you know, pay these bills, or how am I going to make payroll, or how I'm going to, you know, whatever the case may be, it's easy to go like, I'm done. I'm going to throw my hands up and just go back to going to work for someone. If you're not prepared for that resilient part of being an entrepreneur, it takes a lot.
Yeah. In 08, 09, I remember I was working with I would work with builders and I'd work with real estate agents, and everybody before, you know, the economic crash per se, everybody wanted to be a realtor. You know, everybody, you know, the housing market was booming in 05, 04, 05, 06, 07. You know, they were making tons of money. And then all of a sudden, you know, 08 hits and, you know, everybody's dropping like flies because they couldn't, sure. You know, they only knew the good. They didn't know the bad. Sure. And I think you need to struggle. Our best learning is from our mistakes. You know, you can be the greatest at something and, you know, but if you make a mistake, you know, you learn more, and that's everybody says you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your, you know, your achievements. I believe, and a lot of people would agree with me. You have to struggle. It's part of it. You know, some people, you know, daddy has a lot of money and they're going to, you know, daddy's going to upfront the money and they're going to start a business and away they go and they kind of just sail through.
Yes.
What do they really accomplish?
Yeah. I was not fortunate enough to be in that position.
No.
So no. I didn't have somebody handing me a lot of money and go, yeah, here we go.
Yeah, exactly.
Go crush it. Well, so, man, I really appreciate you being on. Any last thoughts?
So sales is important with being a business owner. I mean, it's probably the number one thing. If you can't sell, you better hire somebody that can.
Sure.
You're not closing deals. You know, sure. I like sales. I mean, sure, you get the rejections, but I like being around people, talking to people, and you know, you got to know how to close the deal sometimes. But if that's another big thing with people wanting to start a business is, you know, if it's a sales oriented company and you're not good at sales, get somebody that is, because sure. That's the livelihood of your business right there.
Yeah, and I would say, and you kind of brought this up early, is everybody's good at something.
Yeah.
You as an entrepreneur have to figure out, what is it that you're good at? Are you good at the sales side? Are you good at the operational side? Are you good at solving problems side? Are you good at, you know, the digital marketing side, but not good at the communication with the customer? Whatever you excel at, do that well. Whatever you don't excel at, find somebody to do that part for you, because it takes all the pieces, right?
And even if you can't hire people, especially right out of the gate, you know, with the AIs, you know, are helpful, especially if you need to market and do advertising, you know, get on your social medias, pound the social. I do a lot of social media. I remember, and it's weird, especially with the algorithms today. We were doing a job around here, and it was a pet stain in the carpets, and we had a water claw. And we put the water claw on it, and you could see the dirty water coming up through the water claw. And I put some music to it. It was like a 5-second video. It got 1.6 million views. How that happened, I have no idea. Some things hit, some things don't. So sure. That's exactly why, you know, networking and being around people, because you don't know who's going to see that, you know?
Right.
So if you're starting out, you know, hit your social medias, hit what you know, your Facebooks, your Instagrams, your TikToks, YouTubes. Make videos, you know, even if you only have five viewers. So what? That's five viewers. Sure. You didn't have before.
That's right.
You start out like that. There was a company I used to use, Fiverr, years ago. They would do videos for me, and you pay $5, $10, $15 for doing it. I mean, they're not the greatest quality, but it's something to get you by for now. You know, there are other instead of hiring, you know, a marketing person or somebody to do your advertising.
The AI is going to fix a lot of that too, right? Like I watched a video today of someone. It was for a restoration marketing company of some kind, and it literally had this lady that looked very real talking about something. And then she put this estimate up and like smelled it, like she was going to be smelling this estimate of whatever. And it went through her nose. So she wasn't even a real person, but looked very real. And AI is going to be able to solve a lot of that. So I'm with you, man. I think, you know, let's figure out where we're at. Let's take advantage of every opportunity that's there and be willing to work hard and grind a little bit.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier than, you know, when I, even 20 years ago when I started, you know, I was putting ads in the phone book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was doing phone book ads.
People are going to listen to this and go, in the what?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Pages. They're like, what are you talking about? If my kids see this podcast, they're going to be like, what were y'all talking about?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, it's this thing that used to exist, and now it's like a bookmark or something. I don't know what it is, you know? Michael, if somebody wanted to get touch base with you and learn about ultrasonics or hire you for something up in your area, how do people get a hold of you?
You go to our website. It's gemsonic.com. It's gemsonic.com. You can find us on Facebook, Gem Ultrasonic Cleaning and Restoration, Facebook, Instagram. You know where else you can find us. You can call the office. We're right outside of Philadelphia, 610-429-0244. But yeah, we're pretty prominent on social media. So if you just type in Gem Ultrasonic, you know, you can find us very easily.
Perfect. Well, hopefully this leads to some traction for you. And man, I certainly appreciate you taking the time to be on with us.
All right. Thanks, Clint. Appreciate it.
Michael, take care. We'll see you.
Thank you.